I like to play me latest chart topper. It's called Me Fans Are Stupid Pigs.
The following training video contains performances by highly trained professional criminals.
I think the message to psychos, fanatics, murderers, nutcases all over the world is do not mess with suburbanites because, frankly, we're just not going to take it anymore.
What are you doing out in the middle of nowhere?
Well, I had to get that there crossroads last midnight. Sell my soul to the devil.
What did the devil give you for your soul, Tommy?
Well, he taught me to play this here guitar real good.
Podcasting live from the Nut House basement, down by the river, across the street from the water treatment plant in lovely Lawrence, Kansas. You are listening to Sunglasses After Dark. I am very tired. I may have had all day off work today, but I just got back from New York from a week of CMJ, and it was crazy, and it was insane, and I got to see a lot of bands I really enjoyed, and a few I didn't enjoy so much, and got a lot of records, and not very many of those will be played on this podcast, but who cares, because I've got like all sorts of other new music, which you will enjoy, I assure you, as well as an interview with Shane Sweeney of Two Cow Garage, who are on tour right now. So let's talk about music first. Bunch of new music. Let's get into it. From his recent Live at the Fillmore 25th anniversary double LP and DVD on Yep Rock Records, this is the Reverend Horton Heat with Big Sky and Baddest of the Bad. We'll be right back.
that you've been gone. The bed is so the bad since you've been gone. I lay around here and just drink beer. The bed is so the bad since you've been gone. Everything is bad including me. But being bad is good policy. It protects me from your past till your memory's gone at last. Everything is bad including me.
From their album Cinema, That was Speedball Baby with Black Eyed Girl. Music from The Ugly Beats doing Don't Girl. That was from their album Bring On The Beats on Get Hip Records. They are, I would say, one of the great hidden treasures of Austin, Texas. So many bands from that area get, like, a lot of acclaim and they just get talked up an awful lot. And yet, The Ugly Beats continue to play and put out great garage records. And Bring On The Beats is definitely one of them. And Don't Girl. Goddamn. Isn't that catchy? Yes, it is. Agree with me. New music from The Future Primitives from their album Into The Primitive on Voodoo Rhythm Records out now. That was You Lied. Hell yeah. I mean, originally by The Milkshakes. Let's just talk about, like, how fantastic Voodoo Rhythm Records is. Like, one of those, much like Slovenly here in the U.S., just, like, putting out great, like, underground garage stuff that is catchy. Don't get me wrong. They do have their flaws. I got a new album in the mail today by Becky Lee and Drunkfoot, and I will likely listen to it and then regret it. But such is what you get for an amazing bit of dirty beat there, like The Future Primitives. And we started everything off with the Reverend Horton Heat doing Big Sky, going into Baddest of the Bad from Live at the Fillmore. That is a double LP, complete with DVD and, like, 46-page booklet. It's a massive thing. I think I weighed it, and it weighs 2¾ pounds. It's insane. But if you luck out, as I did, you can pick it up for like $12 or $13. It's ridiculous. And the DVD is really good too. It's like the story of the band as told by them with clips. Here's some more new music from their recently released album, Savior, on Old Flame Records. This is Brooklyn's Shark with This Is Living.
Passing. I'm still here. My life's not over. Come back. Come back here in 10 years. You see how I'm doing now. Because I'm getting married with kids. You don't know. Life just goes on.
From their recently released single Whistleblower, that was the B-side by Brief Lives, No Voice. Really, damn. I like, post-punk, when it's done very well, is just, like, cathartic and released and build and release and build and release and just, bleh! And that's what that song is. If nothing else, grab that single. You can find it on their Bandcamp. Before that, Sloan Peterson from their album Why Go Out. That was Sunshine, a band that I don't know why. Like, every time I come across that song, or really that entire album while I'm in iTunes, I listen to it and go, why am I not listening to this just every day? I don't know. I don't have a good reason for it, but it's always so nice to, like, rediscover it. Before that, Swim by Surfer Blood from Astro Coast. Why Surfer Blood on this podcast? Because that song fit, and it's fucking good. I was also listening to... I recently hooked up my cassette deck down here in the basement and discovered a Canine Records, like, 10-year anniversary cassette that I had picked up last time I was in Chicago, and that song was on it, and I'm like, that has to be on the podcast this week. And so it was. And we started everything off with Shark, doing This Is Living from their new album Savior on Old Flame Records. I had the privilege of getting to see them and, like, talk to them while I was in New York. They played an upstairs show at Pianos, and it was crazy. It was like a house show. Like, the floor was moving. There was no stage. They were just basically playing on the floor, and the audience was only separated from them by, like, monitors. They did that song. They did California Girls, coincidentally, on the Grand Theft Auto 5 soundtrack. Oh, yeah. Definitely. They only pressed, like, 300 copies of that LP, so I would snag one while they're still available, even if they are. So, I told you we had an interview with Shane Sweeney of Two Cow Garage. They're on tour right now. He was kind enough to take time out of his schedule to talk to us, and we discussed touring and all of that stuff, as well as their new album, The Death of the Self-Preservation Society, that they put out last month, courtesy of an Indiegogo campaign, and we talk about that as well. So let's go straight to that. This is Shane Sweeney from Two Cow Garage.
So you guys are kind of like tour horses, right?
Yeah. It's definitely a lifestyle choice.
So, like, is that sort of a necessity, just being a band these days? Or is it just sort of like you guys want to play as many shows as possible?
I think it always has been, actually. Like, have you ever seen the Buddy Holly story?
Yeah.
There's a point in the Buddy Holly story where Buddy Holly decides he doesn't want to tour anymore, and of course, we know how that worked out. But whatever the management was like, I don't know why it is, but to sell records, you have to go tour. So that's, it made him go tour.
Does that still work? I mean, there's a lot of discussion anymore about the idea that, you know, do people even sell records or anything? I mean, does playing shows actually sell your albums?
Yeah, it certainly does. It, especially for, you know, more mid-level bands, taking it to people is really the only way that they hear about it. You know, when we were first starting, it was much more so, but really, like, when we play shows, you know, we sell t-shirts and stuff too, but we sell a lot of music, a lot of vinyl.
So you're finding that, like, people, like, after they see you, if they like you, they want to be able to take it home.
Yeah. I think it's like, you know, people download things for free from the internet all the time, and they may like them, and then, so with us, it tends to be that they do that, and then they actually come to the show, and then they end up buying it.
which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, your fans really backed you recently, because you had the Indiegogo campaign for your new album, Death of the Self-Preservation Society.
Yeah, it was humbling, certainly.
Yeah, because you guys raised, like, $4,000 more than what you were aiming for, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and none of us ever expected, we didn't even really expect to make that goal, you know what I mean? We said it's what we needed, but we were hoping that maybe in the last, you know, the 11th hour or something, it would come through, and that would be right down to the wire, but thankfully it wasn't at all, and we did end up making more than what our goal was.
Now, you guys, your particular Indiegogo campaign, you know, crowdsourced fundraising campaign, is a little more like what it seems to be going towards now, which is, it's not quite a pre-order, but, like, you've already recorded it. You're not asking for help, like, going into the studio or anything like that. You're just like, we need the money to make physical copies of this.
Right. And for us in particular, like, I think that was important, because having to worry about money while you're making art is kind of a really bad situation to be in for the art itself, you know? but once it was made, and then we could honestly say how we felt about it and how much we believed in it, and I think that was a big selling point for it.
Now, when you raised that money, was that just for, like, CDs, or was that for vinyl, or...?
It was across the board for everything that we needed, for mastering and mixing, and obviously getting the physical product, the CDs and the vinyl, and a little bit for publicity and stuff like that.
Well, and when you press something to vinyl, like your mastering and mixing costs change and go up because you're having to do it. It's a totally different beast, right?
Well, the mixing stays the same, but the mastering it's like two different masters, so yeah.
So that's an additional cost. And
right, exactly. It's weird, like, I saw this, like, flow chart on Facebook the other day, and it was like, you know, it costs $5,000 to record a song, which is a lot for one song, but hyperbole, you know, whatever.
Right.
It was like $5,000 to record a song, and then just went through the whole process, and then, you know, then it's costing like $25,000 to put a single out that people buy for 99 cents on iTunes.
Oh, that just sounds brutal.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not a very good business model, I suppose. That's kind of what we're kind of shackled with, but we kind of make records in more of an old school approach to it than actually go into a studio.
What do you find that going into a studio to record gives you as opposed to doing it in a basement, a bedroom, a garage, or whatever?
Isolation, more than anything. Like, we've recorded, there's six records now, and the first one we recorded in a basement, and then the next three we recorded on a ranch in Texas, and then the last two we recorded in a barn outside of Buffalo, New York. And getting out of town, honestly, is way more conducive for working, and being that isolated is way more conducive for working because you're only there for the one thing. Like, you're not worried about going to dinner with your girlfriend or, you know, your friend's calling you in the middle of it being like, hey, we're going to go out to the bar. And you're like, oh, well, we're almost done. We can wrap up now, you know. You're only there to work.
Now, does it allow you to concentrate more on the playing and the generating art aspect of it when you have an engineer or a producer in there who's, like, taking care of that aspect, so you're not trying to, like, split your mind two ways?
Absolutely. I mean, we've always kind of been involved with all of the production of our records. This is really the first one that we've taken production credit on, but I don't know anything about microphones, but I know the sounds that we want to hear, and so does Mike and Murph are the same way. You know, we know they have very distinct visions about what we want things to sound like, and having somebody where I can just explain what I want and they can effectuate that, it really takes a load off of it.
Rather than having to be like, okay, let's try this one.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's still a little bit of that, especially with drum sounds and stuff. And on this record, we really kind of tried different things with the drums and did, so that took just a little bit of time. But once we dialed in what we wanted to have happen, we're just going down and working, you know.
Well, talk some more about that, like, drum sound and doing different things. Did you, like, record in a bathroom or a stairwell or something?
No, the actual studio itself is like a loft of a barn that's over 100 years old that they've retrofitted to be able to record music in. And so that kind of has a nice, like, has the vault ceiling in it already, you know, so it has a nice reverberation. But, I mean, we spent half a day this time trying to get this one specific drum ahead, which now I can't even remember whether or not we ended up getting it or not. But we definitely, especially Mike and Murph, really had a really distinct vision of what they wanted the sound of the kick drum in particular to be. And then we did this thing where we mic'd everything Motown style.
Oh, wow.
So instead of, for instance, like our second record, there were probably, I think there were 14 different mics just on the drum. And then on this record, we had four. It may even have been three. So we had, you know, the mic on the kick drum, and then we had overhead mics. And I think that was it, actually. But that's, you know, that's how they did it for all those Motown sessions. They didn't have enough tracks to do that, but, you know, all those things sound amazing. Everybody's trying to replicate that sound with more stuff.
It's like, no, go back and do it the way they did it.
Exactly.
That's how you get it. I find it interesting because, like, I've read a ton of reviews of you guys and listened to your records and stuff like that, and, you know, you get described as, like, cowpunk or garage or rock and roll, but, like, it's kind of refreshing because you guys, like, just refer to yourselves as a band.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we are a band from Columbus, Ohio.
You know, it's, people take from stuff what they want to hear, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when our first one and a half records, really, were kind of more in the vein of an alt-country kind of record. But then just, we we've pretty much always been a three-piece, except for a couple of years we had an organ player. But just being on the road and growing up, and he's changed, you know, we've grown. We're not really that at all anymore. But because of the name, I think a lot of times people hold on to the country aspect of it. But it's really not anything that we are. I mean, like, Bruce Springsteen records have pedal steel on them, and they have banjos, and nobody would ever refer to him as cowpunk, you know? But there's certainly influences. Like, I mean, still to this day, like, Uncle Tupo is a fantastic band. Like, it's undeniable, but I haven't listened to an Uncle Tupo record in 5 years, you know? So it's like, I try to describe it like the Mississippi. Like, it starts as this little thing, you know?
Yeah.
And then everything, books, music, people, whatever, like, are little tributaries into this thing that becomes a wider river the longer you go along it.
So what do you guys listen to while you're in the van going down the road these days?
A lot of talk radio. A lot of podcasts, actually. Music-wise, like, you know, there's a lot of silent times in the band where everybody's tired and all experience the same story together. So if I'm driving, I try to look for the goofiest kind of music. I listen to a lot of soft rock because it just makes everybody laugh, you know. And but on us, you know, like, serious bands that I've been listening to recently are, like, a lot of Cheap Girls and a band from Brooklyn called Satin French that I've been listening to a lot. And it just runs, everybody has different tastes, so, like, I do a lot of the driving, or tour manager Ryan does, and we just kind of flip through the channels and whatever we feel like hearing at the time.
I've talked to, like, a lot of bands, and they all, like, what seems to be, like, this thread, like, as people go through, like, moving up and now listening to podcasts, because it allows you to sort of, like, maintain, you know, something, continuity while you're driving. What podcasts do you guys listen to?
Otis Gibbs has a really great podcast, actually, called Thanks for Giving a Damn. And then there's this history podcast called Hardcore History.
Oh, yeah, Dan Carlin?
Yeah, Dan Carlin, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We did a month in Europe and then came home for a week, and now we're, like, halfway through this tour. And the entire time we were in Europe, I mean, we listened to probably 12 to 16 hours of Dan Carlin stuff.
Which, in some cases, is, like, 3 or 4 podcasts.
Right, right. I mean, we're, you know, I think we're officially experts on Genghis Khan now. But.
Yeah. So now that you're on tour and you're out and about, like, how long is this particular stretch?
I've kind of been combining them together because we were really only home for 5.5 days or something like that. But this stretch in the U.S. is a little bit more than 4 weeks. And then we go home. Yeah, I have a couple of shows out of town. I think we have a little thing in Little Rock in December. And then take the holidays off. Go back out in February for however long it takes.
When you're home, how do you sort of decompress from your time on the road?
Yeah, again, we're all kind of different, but I don't really get to. I have a 3-year-old, so I go straight down the road to being dad, and it's definitely a 180, but it has to happen immediately, you know?
This new album, The Death of the Self-Preservation Society, do you have plans? I mean, it's relatively new. I mean, it's only been out about a month. But what's the response been, at least, that you've noticed?
So far, it's been overwhelmingly positive. And we've always been really lucky with that. You know, like, it's definitely a word-of-mouth thing with us. But people are always really, really receptive to our records and have been. And we've been lucky enough to get a lot of really good press. But generally, just individuals seem to be really digging it.
Well, I mean, that's really good to hear. I've enjoyed what I've gotten to listen to off of it. Shane, I really want to thank you for taking time out of your tour day to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, Shane.
You're very welcome. Enjoy the rest of your tour.
Okay, man. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Many thanks to Shane Sweeney of Two Cow Garage for taking time out of their very busy touring schedule to talk about their new album and all of that. The Death of the Self-Preservation Society is out now and can be found via twocowgarage.com, and I highly recommend you go pick it up. And let's get back into the music from their new EP / LP. I can't tell. It's like 8 songs, but it's really goddamn short. This is Galactic Cannibal from the album We're Fucked with Air Runs Dry.
Take these arms away and rip my chest out to
Yeah!
to the Czar Bar in Kansas City, and the sound there is usually so muffled and indiscernible, there was no way I wanted to listen to that, like, stoner jam shit get just fucked up by the sound guy, so I missed it. Anyhow, that was Torch with Triumph of Venus from Meanderthal. Their albums are kind of hit and miss with me, but that one, personally, top to bottom, stone cold jammer. Before that, what could have been by Fucked Up from their Epics in Minutes compilation. That's basically all of their early singles on one CD, along with a really terrible, like, live recording slash demo that I highly recommend not listening to. Siv did Can't Wait 1 Minute More from the single of the same name on Revelation Records. Siv, of course, best known as former frontman of Gorilla Biscuits, and I guess as often as they reunite, probably current frontman of Gorilla Biscuits. And we started everything off with Galactic Cannibal doing Air Runs Dry from We're Fucked, featuring members of Direct Hit. And that sounds absolutely nothing like Direct Hit, and isn't that the entire purpose of a side project? I think it is. We've got one more set of music for you, and it's going to be poppy as fuck, yet still have some edge to it. Case in point, we're starting it out with the Bouncing Souls from their single Tales of Doomed Romance. This is Born to Lose.
Hands are broken, I'll still play just to hear you curse my name. to laugh when you see me fall. I'll never stop dreaming, I'll never stop screaming about how every goddamn weekend I'm gonna show you all that it's going down. And you're gonna hear the sound. Even if my hands are broken, my words spoken loud. Gonna hear the sound. Even if my hands are broken, I'll still play just to hear you curse my name. We'll be right back.
from their very excellent album on Lookout Records, Hearts of Oak. That was Ted Leo and the Pharmacists with Where Have All the Rude Boys Gone, a song that is extraordinarily fun to listen to if you're a music nerd because you get to play Spot the Reference. The only one that I think really probably does it better is Plus Ones by Ockerville River. Before that, Elvis Costello did You Belong to Me from this year's Model, an album that if you don't own, you can stop listening to the podcast, go out, buy it, listen to it, and then come back and we'll talk. It's great, isn't it? Continuing from their album on Douchemaster Records, Missing Monuments did Broken Hands. That album is painted white. They've got a new one just out on Dirt Nap. I believe it is self-titled. And I am really burpy and I apologize. The Bouncing Souls did Born to Lose from Tales of Doomed Romance. Thank you for listening. This week's podcast, this episode of the podcast, rather, was a bit long in coming, and CMJ really didn't make anything a whole lot easier, but let it be known that I have plenty of new music all lined up and ready to go, and I've got an interview lined up with Josh Berwanger, and we're going to talk about his new album and horror movies, and it's going to be great, and you can expect that in about 2 weeks. So, thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Tell your friends to download and listen to the podcast. Tell your friends with bands and record labels to send me things. As always, you can go to rockstarjournalist.com for reviews of books and zines and tapes and vinyl and all sorts of other tangible ephemera in this digital age of ours. Again, till next time, thank you for listening.